In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh. And with me is my Justice League International reject, the one, the only.
Is it cold in here, Josh, or is it just me, Travis Rats, Ice, Ratsy? Bang, ding, 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 ding.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. Well, Travis and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades, or we talk about what's going on in the world of geekdom, whatever we want. I think the beauty, Travis, is that we are not beholden to necessarily reading anything new. We read whatever we want, and we talk about that thing.
We are beholden to none but ourselves.
Yeah, no gods, no masters, I say. So, Travis and I, you're on a comic book club episode, and just by listening, you get to belong with us and join in to the pleasures, the carnal pleasures of comic book reading.
For every Comic Exposure podcast you listen to, we give out one for free.
We do. Someone who can't afford a comic book podcast gets one, yeah, free of charge.
Yeah, can't afford. You can't get a better deal. Stream it on. We will. Yeah. For every stream you listen to, we will go live to someone's house who cannot afford any electronic devices.
And we'll just podcast
in front of them
and live in front of them. So on this episode, we are not reading something necessarily new, not something necessarily old. Kind of in that ground in between. When did this book come out, Travis?
Not that long ago, like 20.
Not that long ago. 22, maybe? Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. So we're reading The Human Target, Book 1, by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. Tom King, a show favorite. We've read several things
lots of his.
Greg Smallwood, we did one book with Greg Smallwood.
I was trying to think of what Greg Smallwood book was. Was it the Flintstones?
We did Moon Knight. And the only good thing about that Moon Knight book was how beautiful it was.
Yes. And this is still manages to be 100 times more beautiful than that. The coloring helps on this. Yes. But
Coloring does help. Travis, let's get into this book, The Human Target, Volume 1. Tom King's noir take on a kind of D-list DC character. It's something he loves to do. Take those lower tier characters and give them a meaty story and sprinkle in Justice League International. And it's a whodunit. Human Target's been murdered.
Classic
Human Target. What his job is to be the human target. And he pretends to be people, gets shot at or killed so he can find out who the real killer is. This book starts with him doing that for Lex Luthor.
He puts himself in danger to keep you out of danger.
That's right. It's a good tagline. And in this one, he's poisoned. It has 12 days left to live. 12 issues.
Counting clock.
Travis read the first 6 issues. That's what book 1 is about. Book 2 is the next 6. 6 days.
I don't know why I'm like hype. I'm hype manning you this episode.
You are hyping me.
Counting clock. Like, six days.
You're Flavor Flav in the background for me. Travis, I want to know, before you read this, what do you know about Human Target? What do you know about the Justice League International?
Nothing. I know nothing about the Human Target. Nothing. I know nothing about Justice League International. And after it, I still don't know if I know much about them. I did Google, while I was waiting for you to pop on, I was like, okay, I know, and I want to talk to you about we're going to let you talk shop on Justice League International, because I know you did a recent dive or relatively
because
recent
of this
dive
book. Because okay. of this book, I okay. started reading J.
I can see that. Did not know, but I looked up the Human Target, and I guess there are two characters in the DC universe named the Human Target. One from like a 1950s book, and then this version of the Human Target, Christopher Chance, was like in the 1970s. Len Wein.
Yeah, the guy's good old Len Wein.
And then the guy, I guess they had a couple of television series, The Human Target, too, with the same kind of premise, right? I think maybe not the superhero part of it, but the idea that someone who puts himself in harm's way to keep you out of harm.
And you would not have known that TV show was like a DC comic books TV show, right? It had nothing to relate to with that. It was just like spy, right? So, don't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about Human Target before I read it. My Justice League International is like, I know who those characters are.
Yeah.
Like,
let's count who we know.
Yeah.
I knew Guy Gardner. I knew Booster Gold, right? And I knew Manhunter, but he's not Justice League International, was he? He was just...
He is. He comes in and out of Justice League, right?
I knew Blue Beetle. I did not know, two of the main ones. I guess I knew a lot of them. I guess I didn't know Fire and Ice. And there were a couple others in the big group shot of the Justice League International that I did not know.
So this is really... What happens is you read the first part of this. The second part of this, we visit more of the Justice League International, right?
Oh, the ones I don't know.
As he's going through and talking to Rocket Red, and we see some of the other characters that are in the Justice League, the Russian Iron Man, right?
Okay.
So he's going through.
He saved the D-listers of the D-list team for the second half. Smart.
Yes. You get Gnort in the second half.
Don't know.
You get the dog looking Green Lantern in the second half.
Oh, I have seen images of him, yes.
Yes. So, I'm with you. I didn't know anything about these characters other than, I know who they are, right? My Booster Gold reading comes out of Death of Superman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Oddly large role in that book.
My Blue Beetle reading, I don't know that I've ever read a Blue Beetle-centric thing.
Death of Superman.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You saw everybody show up then. After this, I've got my stack of Justice League Europe is what I got into after reading this was Justice League Europe, because Justice League Europe is like the weirdos of the weirdos, right? So if Justice League America is like, oh, look, here's the interesting characters. And then Justice League Europe is like, here's all the cast-offs. And then those two books got crammed together for Justice League International. So they took those two separate titles, Justice League America and Justice League Europe,
and put them
and
together.
Smushed them and becomes Justice League International.
I want to do Justice League American Territories. Guam.
Guam. That's a good one. The Samoa. Samoan Islands.
Puerto Rico. Yeah.
That'd be good.
And they call it, that writes itself, annexation. That's our hero from there.
It does. That's good.
He can get himself out of tight spots.
I like it. So... no knowledge of this, not a lot. And this book is really dives into this idea of it doesn't matter that you know these characters and that.
No.
It's okay that you just know who they are.
Do you think that is Tom King just being like, hey, I really want to dip my toes into noir genre and they've been coming at me to do something for Black Label. So let me just find a character to write a noir story with.
I'm curious about that. Or if he's like, you know what? I think we read his Vision story. Human Target is one. He does one with Mr. Miracle. He does a book with Adam Strange. And so you get all of these hey, let's take just a character that doesn't get a lot of love right now and let's do something interesting with him. So I'm curious if he was just thumbing through stuff and was like, oh, Human Target, that'll be interesting. What can I do with that?
Yeah.
And then he just does something with Human Target, or if he goes, I don't know if it's genre first or character first.
Do you remember it was Wizard? It was a Wizard imprint. It wasn't Toy Biz, Toy Fair. What was the Wizard one with just about action figures and toys? Do you know what I'm talking about though?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They would always have a section where people would make their own toys, where they would cobble together. A He-Man bust, and then they paint it to be like another character. That's what Tom King is really good at. Just taking like the broken toy in the bottom of your toy chest that you don't play with. You're like, what is this, Wheels from Burger King Kids Club? I'm going to turn this into something badass.
I love it. And it's like it becomes a Franklin Roosevelt action figure.
little plaid blanket.
Yeah. So let's just dive into this story. As you're cycling through it, as you're reading these six books, how are you feeling about the story that he's unraveling? I've read a lot of Tom King and I go yes, this is Tom King, but at the same time, man, he really does nail the tone and the feel of just the noir nature of this, right? but also the silly nature of what it is, right? He leans in hard.
Right. Yes, it is. I think he does a good job of grounding the noir in the main character, Christopher Chance. The other character Justice League's members are allowed to be silly around him, but Chance is the hard-boiled detective. It's almost like Roger Rabbit, right? In the sense that our lead is like, no, I am straight noir detective. Everything else can be weird and goofy around me, but I'm not going to crack. I'm not going to do something zany. I'm not going to develop weird powers, at least in the first six issues. and I'm just going to play the straight man to this absurdity.
Yes.
And, you know, I think he did that same thing for Vision, too. It was like, it was an absurd situation, but Vision stayed true to form. Right. You know, it was like the sense of like this character is our rock. And then the other things can kind of orbit in silly, absurd or odd, bizarre ways around it.
I think what he does really well with this book and some of the other books we've read is he like treats these things and grounds these characters not in like a Watchmen or grounded superheroes or like Frank Miller sort of like bloody tough superhero, but it's not like if this was just happening in the real world, everything feels real. So it's like a real story, but it's using these characters. It's like you're playing. It's like you mixed your Barbies and your superheroes together, or your G.I. Joes and your superheroes, and you just did this thing where like, okay, somehow they're in the real world, but it's a very like superhero story, but it feels very real.
We're not going to acknowledge that Barbie is 12 inches and G.I. Joe is 4 inches. It's just, we're accepting it.
Yes. And it just really feels like, you know, I'm just going to tell a real story with superheroes. Yes. So we get that in a lot of the books he does where it just feels like lived in and normal, but at the same time, very surreal because they're superheroes. So that Vision story is like, what if Vision were like just a dad? What if you were just at home, right? He goes to work. And it must, you know, be such but,
a... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but everything's kind of weird around him. You know what I mean?
And it must be such a joy for a writer of any kind. Oftentimes, writers get genre honed, right? So it's like, I write this. And he's just able to jump. I mean, Sheriff of Baghdad, you know, which is like a political special ops... CIA kind
crime,
of book.
Yes,
we have a domestic book in Vision. I'm not sure what the Mr. Miracle one is. I tried reading it years
that
ago.
That one's like with depression and suicide, right?
Yeah,
like
it
deals with all of that.
So yeah, it's not all writers can jump around and have success with that. Most try, and as soon as they get the critic's response on their big swing, they're like, back to horror.
Well, then we read Supergirl, which doesn't read anything like this, right?
That's a road trip. It's a space odyssey.
Space road trip. And so this book really leans into that noir. And so I want to ask you, what do you think of Christopher Chance, the Human Target, as our noir lead? How does he work for you?
I mean, paint by numbers, right, on this, which I think is necessary. Like, everything is there from the alcohol problems to like the commitment issues and trust issues with women, to the father issues, to the haunted past, to the I don't give an F attitude when it comes. You destroy my car, it's fine, whatever. You know, unaffected. Yeah. I got 12 days to live, whatever. I'm bumming around. We solve this kind of thing. And I love it. I mean, Comic Exposure really has turned into the comic noir podcast over the last 30 years. Thanks, Brew Breaker. But it's also probably like our age.
Probably. But I agree
with
you.
Noir detectives are the middle-aged man superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. But he leans into it so hard, and he writes him so spot on and so genre-specific. And I think you're right. You have to, because everything floating around it is just goofy, right? But man, the femme fatale, Ice as the femme fatale, is great.
Yeah.
The scene where like the guy who owns the pizza place below, like Luigi, is like sometimes there's women you can't say no to.
Right. And another noir trope, right? The yes. front to your office or apartment has to be a weird front. A movie theater, a pizza parlor, a laundromat, right? A comic book yes. store.
It's like wonderful how in just that scene you get that first look at her as a, you know, as the femme fatale, and you're like, yep, okay. This is it. This is what we're doing.
Okay.
We're in.
With that, you've read the back six, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, noir rules is Ice comes in and like, you're just like, okay, well, obviously this is you. Now he could twist at the end. The noir has to kind of do that sometimes. Cause it's like, otherwise it's the femme fatale. Right. But also as a reader too, I'm like, bro, it's Ice. I'm like,
but I think this, and I'm not, you know, like spoiler alert, right?
Yeah.
It's Ice.
Okay.
But how he gets there.
Yeah.
Like how he figures it out is just like, oh, okay. This whole like sort of like,
it was just like
how
okay.
it takes him to get there. And you get to a point where he's like, yeah, I've been pretty sure the whole time, but man,
Josh, okay. So
I spent 12 days with her.
Break this down. Let me break this down for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
His whole thing starts when he is taking a hit for Lex Luthor, right? He takes a bullet. Lex Luthor sets him up to rile the public up. And it wasn't the bullet. It was earlier that day while he was setting up for it, as Lex Luthor, he drank some coffee, right? And that coffee had poison in it, okay? So we're kind of tracking this down. Very early on, like within the second issue, we find out that there is this cosmic being who... Lex Luthor and him made a deal, and that led to the death of Ice. And then Chance goes and puts everyone else as a suspect, except for the person who was dead because of Lex Luthor's thing on there. And I'm just like, bro.
So you get far enough in, and again, spoiler alert, he goes like, the reason I kept her so close is I'm pretty sure it was her this whole time. I just wanted to make sure I knew, right?
Yeah.
And so just kind of playing the game for her sake to see that he can figure out who it is, right?
Yeah.
He does a masterful close to this. I think it's a really great 12 issues. And we're going to talk on our next episode about what our summer continuation reads are. And part of me just wants to make you read the second half.
I do. I when you asked me, did I read all 12? I was like, I should just say yes. No, I could see me reading the other six of this, no problem. Especially when we start talking about art here in a
yes,
few.
Yes, Jesus. So we're gonna get to the art, but I think one of the things for me as we go through this is I really did enjoy the character of the book or monster of the week sort of take on these issues. Like, okay, the Ted Kord Blue Beetle issue is great.
Yeah.
It is like, there's something like they're just hopping around crime to crime and you kind of get to see how the Blue Beetle does his
thing. Blue Beetle's so annoying. Like he just won't shut
up. And just, he won't shut up and he just keeps talking. The Guy Gardner one
stuff.
Is like
the Guy Gardner
stuff
is brilliant.
Is fantastic.
Because it is what some writers won't allow Guy Gardner to be, because he has to be the protagonist of the book. So we can give a little bit of that a-holeness.
Right.
But since he's, you know, a side character in a Black Label Elseworlds book, we can totally kill him.
And you can totally like screw with him. Right. And you can totally do that. One issue I just want to talk about. And this one, the first time I read it, and I know that you finished this today before we did this, the Martian Manhunter episode issue, went over my head the
Me
first
too.
Time I read.
I thought I was gonna, as I was reading it this afternoon, that part I was like, "Am I gonna have to get Joss to explain this?"
So that issue, I had to read it twice because I was like, "Okay, what is going on?" So
I got it now. I think.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think it doesn't become clear until the last page about what the hell is going on, right?
About it's, and it's, then, the, so I, it's how the money got to the bagel water.
Right, how the money got to the big water. So it ends up being, but the story is, the piece of it is all about, like, they're going to dinner with Martian Manhunter. And Martian Manhunter is probing human target's mind to find out what he knows, to find out his deepest, darkest secrets. At the same time, it is this flashback of Human Target's training when he's younger about how to, at the same time, read the person who's reading your mind's mind.
You take the hit, and like a Human Target would, yes, and like then while they're taking the hit, you're going around it, grabbing all their stuff.
Yeah, and gathering all their stuff because they're too honed in on, like, being, they're like, I can't believe I'm deep diving into their mind. They're letting me get their secrets, right? And while they're doing that, you get into theirs. And the piece of it is, it could happen as quickly as you passing the salt to someone.
And you see that and salt so the shaker scene is, over and over.
The yeah. scene is them, like, at dinner, and he says, can you pass the salt? And throughout this whole piece where he's, like, remembering his dad dying and the flashback of being trained, and then the scenes of Martian Manhunter's brain, right, of what's going on in his mind, it's sprinkled in with, like, just Christopher Chance passing the salt to the Human Torch. It all happens within a second.
The only button I wish they had on that is, like, the last thing the Martian Manhunter pulls from his brain is the memory of his training where he's learning this technique. But that point, it's too late. And so there's that there would be a moment when the Manhunter's like, oh, shit. You know? Yes. Like, it just happened.
I agree with you. That would have, like, added it to it as well. But I just thought, like, man, that is it's a ton of panels. He does it, and we've talked about this before, like, some writers and artists are really good at slowing down time, right? Of, like, the way you do your panels, the way you do that. You see this, like, salt shaker every page just move just barely as he's passing it. And the story's unfolding. You're like, what the hell is this salt shaker, right? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, all of this is happening like that. And it's just this great way of showing that.
It made it a little bit complex, too, because despite how good the art is, hit the guy who's ultimately holding his old trainer blackmail looks a lot like Lex Luthor. So I'm like, is this Lex Luthor on here? Because he's bald and he's got a suit on. And he's the one who was holding that Titan woman hostage and stuff like that. And she ultimately gets Christopher Chance to kill him for her.
Yeah.
But he looked a lot like Lex Luthor. So I was like, is he Luthor?
It's yes. And it's
opening of the, speaking of confused, you're like, the opening of it, it's Lex Luthor. And you're getting this overdubbed narration. So you think it's Luthor talking. And he's talking about this bald cap being itchy. And I'm like, wait, is Lex Luthor wearing a bald cap? And then you're like, oh, of course, you're a target. This makes sense. I'm an idiot.
Right. I agree with you. It's this really sort of very interesting way for him to structure this narrative as he's doing this. And I think one of the things, and I think, you know, I don't know if you said it before we started recording, and you may have, like, this, you could have told the story in six, right? But I think what he does is, in these 12 days to live story, you really get the sense of, like, drawing out what it means to be the Human Target for 12, you have 12 days left to live, right? He could have done, you've got 6 days left to live. But I think what you get is and you didn't read the second book, but that deeper connection between him and Ice.
I do like that connection. Yeah.
Yeah. His desperation to both stay with her and his desperation to find out, did she really do it or did someone else do it?
Yeah.
And his desperation to, like, hold on just a bit longer, I think really helps this 12-issue maxi series for you to go, like, all right, he's got one day left. How does he figure this? How does he get to it? How is he, like, there's one issue in the second half where he meets Rocket Red, and Rocket Red, like, keeps, like, knocking him unconscious. And he keeps waking up and he keeps going, what time is it? Because he's so mad that he's losing a day. That he's lost a day with Ice. He's lost a day finding out, because Rocket Red keeps trying to, like, is upset. He's like, I think that you killed Guy Gardner.
Yeah, yeah.
where is Guy Gardner? And so he keeps like beating him up, and then he passes out and he wakes back up and he's like, what time is it? And he's like, time for you. And he just like beats him up again and he passes back out. And so he keeps getting pissed that he lost a whole day of being with Ice, figuring out this story, like figuring out the mystery. It's such a great sort of like, it's paced very well because he's tied to that. Each issue is a day.
Yeah. And the relationship with Ice that you're talking about it's really good as far as like the femme fatale love interest on there. There's one scene in the book where it's early when they meet and they're at the beach and she swims out there and he swims out way too far too. And he knows he can have these coughing attacks at any moment. And so like he's having this coughing attack and he's like, oh my God, she's going to have to like, you know, carry me back in or whatever it is. And she just comes up and kisses him. And because like, you know, she can control the temperature and stuff. It's like this just kind of icy, soothing menthol like coursing through his body. And I was like, oh, that's so nice.
And I think there's a lot of little scenes, and this kind of ties into art to kind of bridge those things where you see their relationship grow over these six issues and get that sort of like, oh, they're flirting. Oh, they're holding hands, right? So when they're with Ted Kord and he's got his arm up on the thing and then she grabs his hand and like in three panels, you see it go from like, oh, they're really holding hands, right? And then the next time when they're leaving in Ted Kord's thing, you see her hand on his thigh.
My thigh, yeah.
And the hand goes into his inner thigh and you're like, those are three just, those panels are like, okay, all right, I see what's happening, right? You know, you've been in those moments in your life when you're in that, you're building that relationship and you're hitting that sort of like, are we doing this? And that time freezes in those moments and you can feel it kind of like beat to beat.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is it. This is where we're at. And I think, though either he was very direct on what he wanted those panels to look like, or Smallwood just, they had to have paired up on how this looks. Cause King does this in a lot of his books, no matter who he's writing with, that multiple panel, let's show this, let's show this, let's show this. But Smallwood, his art is so good in this.
It's fantastic. This
so good.
This is the best looking book that I have read in years.
Yeah.
And
it is.
Going back to what you said there before we gush over this art is my thing with the hands, holding hands on the side. To me, with this art style, when she just puts her head on his shoulder and has this look on there. Like
the look
I'm
on
just
her face.
Like, it's so, like, I want that like as like a whole wall of my house.
Yes.
And just, it's so freaking good. And everyone is so expressive, and it fits the genre so well. Okay, so the art on here
is, man.
I mean, the pencils are fantastic. This book would
be it's all digital. So Smallwood works digital. So he's found a way to make it look just like it's not right. You feel the grains, the granular nature of graphite on it, and it's sketchy, but it's not sketchy.
The colors
bleed in certain areas. It's like sometimes there's like a phone, and it just like, well, that's, those buttons look weird. Those aren't like, they're not they don't look real, but it's so realistic. You know what I mean? Like
hatching and shading is like little doodle squiggly lines that you would like doodle, like if you're just like running out of time.
Yes.
Or,
but somehow they look amazing.
They look fantastic. And the coloring just brings it all out. I mean, whatever, let's see who the colorist is.
It's him. Smallwood does all.
Cause he does it all digitally. Whatever digital color program it is, and I always see these ads. You might get them too because you look at comic stuff where they're always trying to sell you digital
brush packs.
Yeah, and I always get bamboozled because I'm like, oh, look at this art! Like, I want to like, is this a print? And it's like, no, it's an ad for a new digital brush thing. And I'm like, man, I wish I was an artist because all the cool digital brushes they have, like they have like, it should be called the Smallwood set. I see it all the time for that really kind of pulpy coloring.
Yes.
Where he does this thing where he'll almost like it's got to be just the outline of it. Like, I'm sure it's a thing on the app where if you look at here, like Josh, where he does the around the hair, where he'll do like a neon band of color like around heads and things like that. And I love this green that he's so fond of. That green lantern green that shows up in pens. Yeah. It shows up in lettering. It shows up in so many places. I just freaking love that color. It's greens, it's so, pinks, and browns.
And his facial acting that he gives to every character, and it's not just the main characters, right? I mean, the work that he does with Ice throughout this is amazing.
Okay, so
the way that she looks, she's getting, they dive into the water, and just her hair being wet, and she's kind of looking at him as she's like brushing her wet hair back. You're like, how does he make it look so good?
So up until this point, number one comic book crush, June from Basketful of Heads. Ice may have taken it over there. Ice might have taken it over there.
It's so good in all of his facial expressions. Guy Gardner's like smug ass smirk that he does. There's one scene where it's like, it's literally Booster Gold, or it's not Booster Gold, it's Ted Kord, it's Blue Beetle, like with a metal thing around a bear, and he's pulling it. And his expression is just like, you can see him like, oh yeah, he's physically working as he does that. There's all these pieces that are just, man, it is so, it's
even
so
the way
good.
He draws like just a glass of whiskey.
Yes.
He's like,
I need some whiskey. Yeah. It's just good. So the book ends with a pretty great sort of, this idea of they killed Guy Gardner, right? Where she freezes Guy Gardner. He punches Guy Gardner's head. It explodes. And then he tells her, I'm falling in love with you. They make out. And then it's like, he does this several times in the book where there's just text along one side and then some images along the other. And it's a chunk of frozen Guy Gardner melting.
Yeah.
And they're talking about like what they're doing and should they have saved him? Should they have called somebody? And just, you know, like that they're just there and they did something while that body was melting. And it's just so, it's so good. It's so, I can't explain.
Falling in love.
Well, you can see, like, imagine...
It's something like a Deadpool movie. It's something like they would slow down and do like a Deadpool movie.
It's so cinematic.
Yeah.
It's so cinematic that you can't explain it. And it is a very... It's a gory idea. But for some reason, in this book, it doesn't feel gory. There's just something, like, oddly beautiful about it. About a melting chunk of Guy Gardner's head. Right? And... It's, I don't know.
It's also like foreshadowing is like when you melt the ice, like underneath it, you find like the brutal gore of it, which I'm guessing is, as we uncover our femme fatale, there's going to be a not so pleasant underneath.
And it ends with him going back to the office and Luigi says, there's some women you can't say no to again. And it's fire up in his office. And dude, I wish you would have read the whole thing. I think
if it was free on Kindle Unlimited, I would have, Josh. This is a $10 digital read, bro.
I know. I got both of them in hardcover.
And the hardcover is actually pretty affordable. It's only like 22.
Because it's so beautiful. I think you can get them in one volume now. I think you can get the omnibus of both of them.
I like the two.
But I like the two because it does... There is that break, pun intended, with Guy Gardner and what that ends. It's such a great, like, okay, what the hell happens next? They just killed a superhero.
Yeah, right? It's a slippery slope. I feel a little crushed.
How does this pan out for them at the end of this? So, Travis, here's what I want to know. Out of this book, favorite in the first six, who's, I mean, you can't count Ice and
Booster Gold
Chance because... Okay, I was going to ask, who's your favorite person they run into?
Booster Gold is fun because I only knew him. Booster Gold, to me, like, when he's popped in, like, the three or four things I've seen him in, might be, like, Animal Man and, like, Superman and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's just
it's like,
goofy.
No, well, it's not even, like, it's not even personality whatsoever. So yeah. I like the fact that I like his joke about he doesn't pre-toast his bagels, and I like how he goes back to ancient times to, like, get his ingredients. And I'm like, if that was the case, this bagel shop would be doing a lot better than it's doing.
But it's Booster Gold. He fails at everything.
Yeah. And his little robot. So
I love his little robot, right? Is it Skeet? Is that the robot's
name? Yeah.
Something like that. Something like that. It's. But I agree. That was a really good one. I think just for the pure fact of, like, I think the best issue with one of those characters that you spend time with, I think, is Blue Beetle. I really enjoyed that. Just, like, spending all of that time. I think that issue is real interesting, and I just enjoyed the sort of, like, he wouldn't shut up.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like, I wouldn't kill him. Killing people's wrong, but that's exactly what someone who would kill somebody would say. So I get how you wouldn't believe me, right? And he goes on this whole thing. But Booster Gold was a ton of fun. It was really
Well, the Beetle one is really nice, too, because it's a huge issue for their relationship, right?
Right.
And it's weird. It's like, you go on a camping trip with, like, you, this kind of girl maybe you're kind of seeing, and then, like, some, like, goofy bro, like, the whole time, like, you're both putting up with him, but, like, your chemistry is building, and you're like, just, can we, like, get some alone time, please?
And it's like they got to spend the whole day together, right?
Yeah.
They spend literally the whole day together kind of hanging out.
Yeah, there's that one point where they're fighting off scene, and it's just like four panels of bing, bang, boom, pow. And the way he's looking at her, you know, he's observing her, he's taking it all in. But it's also like, I can just hear, like, the romantic music playing in the background.
And in that thing, he's like, she's lying. Like, she could have... Like, she's not even trying.
She's holding back,
She could have snapped her fingers and destroyed any of these things within seconds, but she's letting him play superhero, too.
Yeah.
Right? She's so powerful and can do all of this. And I thought that was, Rick, it's both you're learning about him, you're learning about her, and then you get to see that relationship build throughout that day, and what does that look like? Travis Ratz.
Good book. Another good Tom King.
Dude, he's a great writer, and he knows who to work with. I don't know how to say it any other way. There has not been a book that he's done where I've like, oh, that I don't like that artist. Even
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who in the comic book industry would not want to work with Smallwood.
Right.
I don't know who. I mean,
how is he not doing more books, man?
It probably takes him a long time. I mean, this is fantastic.
Like, do everything.
Yeah.
Just do everything.
I do. There's not one book out there that I don't think would benefit from Smallwood doing it.
I agree. You know what I want? And this is just me as a guy who loves, like, these again. So I'm looking at my pile on the floor of the three series that I'm collecting floppies of. Green Arrow, the Grell run, Animal Man, that starts with Morrison, and then Justice League Europe. And I get him doing Justice League Europe here. It's fun. Tell me that a Black Canary Green Arrow book with Smallwood doing it. And the fishnets. I just want to see him do fishnets on Black Canary, and just how good would his Black Canary be? I don't even need Green Arrow in it. It could just be a Black Canary book.
Yeah.
Just give me a Black Canary book.
What's interesting is these are all humanoid figures too. It would be interesting to see how you'd handle something like, I mean, there is a little bit of, I mean, Chance looks like Mr. Fantastic in this, but like the thing, how would he do something that's not human?
Oh, I bet he would do a fantastic thing.
Fantastic. Or maybe he stays away from that stuff because, like, he's tried it, and it's like some guys can't draw horses.
But I mean, he does do Martian Manhunter in this. He does good,
which is, I think, one of the weaker ones. Honestly, the weaker character designs is Martian Manhunter.
I can see it, and I think he plays it very much like this is just what he looks like in JLI.
Because he takes humans and he gives them the sharp angles, you know, kind of. But that's, I think, harder to do on, I don't know, it'd be interesting. I'm going to look through at some of the other stuff he's done and see, and I might just go get some Smallwood books that I'm not interested in the title, but just want to see the art. And also, by the way, these covers
are great.
I want all of them.
So good.
I want all
of them. They're so pulpy. They're so great. I
might try to collect these 12 issues just to have the cover.
And single? That's not a bad idea. I think that inside every one where it's the calendar and he's ticking off the days and you get more and more blood from the coughing on the calendar is such a good, man, it is such a great idea. Like, there's the design of this whole book is great. The title pages.
Yep.
Like, just the title pages, it's the you know, the blinds, or it's the receipt, or it's the, all of that is done so well. All of it is so good. It is a beautiful book, really well written. Go and read it. I don't know what else to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Except it's great. Go do it.
Yeah. And if you, and it doesn't matter. Fan, I mean, you probably already read it.
You knew who it was from the beginning. So yeah. I don't think I spoiled it, but how he gets there.
Yeah.
How he does it. And I will tell you, there's the epilogue after.
Well,
that's I think
it,
is really
get it in hardcover. It's so good. Even if you don't read it, you can put it on your, you can flip through
just
it.
Just put it on your coffee table, man. Yeah. Just put it on your coffee table. It's a great coffee table. That's the only thing is I wish, I've got a couple oversized books and I wish this was a oversized print.
That would be cool.
Right? Just a big damn 11 by 17 beauty.
Yeah. And they've done that with Black Label before.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Travis. I think that's our conversation about Human Target. It's gorgeous. It's well written. Go pick it up if you haven't. Go read it. On the next episode, Travis, you and I are plotting our summer rereads or summer continuation.
Are you ready for my pitch on this? The summer,
yeah.
The summer reheat.
Ooh, summer reheat. I like
summer.
It.
Like, we're gonna reheat some summer. Of those old books. Continue on with some of them. Heat them up. Put them in the microwave. So, they've been cold for a while, baby.
Next episode, Travis and I are going to talk about which books we're going to reheat for this summer. So over the years of doing this, over the 10 years of doing this podcast, Travis and I have read a lot of volume ones and not a lot of volume twos.
And don't get too far in this conversation, Josh, because we need
something to talk about. But I just want to tell you, that's what we're going to talk about on the next episode. We're going to talk about what we're going to read for the summer, and we're going
to
talk
because
about
we need to
why.
because we need to figure this out.
Yeah,
so we're going to pull the curtain
about,
back a little bit, and then
we're going to talk about why. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about, like, I think it'll be a good conversation.
And I'm curious to discover if you went through the same process that I went to, and then as you were going through it, like what discoveries did you make about our past episodes? Okay,
I think it'll be good. All right, folks. Thank you for tuning in. You can find the podcast on all the podcast apps. You're listening to it, so you found it somewhere. But if you want to go to the website, you can check out the website, comicexposure.com. You can rate and review it on any place that you're listening to it. We appreciate that. That's cool. Share with your friends, other comic book nerds. If you and your friend talked about reading a book and you didn't, or you can go back and listen to so many episodes and go like, oh, I haven't read that before. I want to read that and hear what they say. Do it.
And remember our promise. We will go out and talk about comics in front of someone without a phone live.
Yeah. Yeah.
My mother.
Every book you read, say hi to your mother for me. Anyways, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.